Welcome to the County Conversations Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Association of Counties Institute for County Government, with support from the University of Florida's IFAS. In this podcast, we dive deep into the diverse and dynamic world of Florida's counties with engaging interviews and thought-provoking conversations surrounding the challenges as well as successes of Florida's counties. Each episode brings you firsthand perspectives from county commissioners, government officials, community leaders, and subject matter experts who are shaping the future of our state. We explore a wide range of topics from economic development and public safety to environmental conservation and emerging technologies. Our aim here is to provide a platform for knowledge sharing, collaboration, and inspiration for county officials and residents alike. Whether you're a county commissioner, government professional, or simply interested in understanding the local government landscape, we hope this podcast provides valuable insights and practical takeaways on all things counties.
All right. And we are live, so to speak. And let me introduce to County Conversations one of our first guests that we've had on in quite some time. It is Shannon Weiner. She's the Emergency Management Director in Monroe County. And Shannon, thanks for taking some time and coming on the show. And what I'd like to do is typically have our guest tell us a little bit about themselves, a little background, where you're originally from, and talk about your current community, maybe some hobbies, that sort of thing.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So I was a little bit of an Army brat. I was born overseas in a town called Vicenza, Italy. While my parents were living there, my dad was stationed in the Army. And we moved to the States when I was four. My mom came back and my dad stayed overseas. And we moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, which is where my parents had both gone to college and met. My dad came home from the Army and there was a horrible snowstorm blizzard in Cincinnati. And he said, well, you know, if I have to work, I'm going to work where I want to retire. So he packed us up and we moved to Florida. So I have been a resident of South Florida, lived both on both coasts, grew up all over South Florida, East and West Coast, and in Central Florida, Daytona Beach as well. So I like to think I'm a Florida girl, and I currently live in the beautiful Florida Keys. Here in Marathon is where I come to work every day. I get to drive over the 7 mile bridge and back to go to and from work. You know, living in an island community, although we are spread out over 100+ miles, the Florida Keys are still a small town. Definitely still has that small town feel. So really enjoy being here and love being around the water. And then, of course, you know, my hobbies revolve around the water. Swimming, diving, snorkeling, boating. I love to run. It is my stress release. And I can't think of a more beautiful place to do those things than here in the Florida Keys.
All right. You're making everybody, including myself, envious of your beautiful community. And somebody just set a record, underwater record in the Keys, right? I think he was a USF professor and spent, I don't know, over 30 days underwater.
Actually, I think he spent over 90 days.
90 days.
In Largo, yeah, at John Pennekamp State Park.
In 30 feet of water. That 30 was stuck in my head, so that was pretty amazing.
30 is more than enough.
So let me, just for those who are tuning into the podcast, for the next several weeks, we are going to be speaking with a number of different leaders of organizations, associations that we either directly or indirectly have connections with. Sometimes it's just policy work, sometimes it's legislative work. And it's really an opportunity for those groups who do a lot of work in support of our association to let other members of the state, of our counties, know who they are and what they do. And so you are, Shannon, the first of the associations that we're talking to. And I want to talk about your profession, in two ways. You are currently the president of the Florida Emergency Preparedness Association. Congratulations on that. And so I want to talk about first from a Monroe County perspective, since it is so unique in so many ways, to talk about your county as it relates to disaster planning, response, recovery, and then because you're president of FEPA, just from a statewide perspective, just talk about what your association does in terms of connecting, supporting, and working with other counties that are of different sizes. You know, we get small counties as small as 7,000 population. We have a county as large as 2 million. So if we could, let's begin by talking about your position as the county's emergency management director. And I'd like to, how would you define what your primary roles and responsibilities are in Monroe County?
So here in Monroe County, as the county emergency management director, I answer to the county administrator, and it's my responsibility to take the lead and be the facilitator and coordinator to any disaster that may occur in the county. But it's not just about response. Like you said, it's about planning, mitigation, and recovery from any disaster, whether it be man-made or Mother Nature made. So really what I do is I work hard to bring all of our county partners together, whether they be in the public or private or not-for-profit sector, to be able to coordinate that response, to be able to do what we can to prevent or lessen the severity of any disaster or threat, and help us respond and recover as efficiently as possible. So here in Monroe County, you know, we're very unique in the fact that we are a chain of islands, but we're kind of considered a rural county because our population is around 80,000. But then we're highly visible, like some of the larger counties across the state of Florida. So it's a unique mix, and just the geography itself provides us with a lot of unique challenges.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, given the county's geography, and I had to look this up. So it's 220 miles in length, 983 square miles, bounded by all sides by water. You basically have one primary road going in and out of the county, a very, very long one, plus the bridges. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of us know about the environmental and planning challenges that Monroe County has, the affordable housing issues that you have, the workforce housing challenges that you have. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the challenges you have as an EM director in that very unusual environment in terms of what are the primary challenges for you? Of course, I think immediately of sheltering, evacuation. Can you talk about some of those challenges?
Sure. Sheltering and evacuation in Monroe County is really not like anywhere else in the state of Florida. It is that linear geography because we are linear and spread out over such a long area with the one road in and one road out, US 1. It creates, just to start, evacuation challenges, right? Transportation is a concern, timing is a concern, getting those people out with enough notice. Something that we do here in Monroe County that is different is that we, from other counties across the state, is that we call for a mandatory evacuation of our county for a high-end Category 2 or a Category 3 hurricane. And that is because our entire county, being a chain of islands connected by 43 bridges, we are a surge zone. Every piece of land in our county is in a surge zone. Therefore, making any storm of that great magnitude extremely dangerous to our residents to stay here and survive. So it is unique. You know, in a lot of places, you'll hear the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Kevin Guthrie, or other EM directors say, you know, sometimes you only have to evacuate 5 miles or 3 miles just to get out of that surge zone. But in Monroe County, we are, every island is in the surge zone. So we do have to evacuate to the mainland. Because of that, we have a fantastic partnership with our friends at Miami-Dade County. They, and as well as Florida International University, they partner with us on shelters for our general population, our pets, and our special needs community here in Monroe County. They provide us the shelter space for our Monroe County residents. So if we are having a storm, a category 2, 3, 4 storm, they open their doors and they provide our county residents a safe haven. So incredibly unique. When we shelter in county, for a tropical storm or a low end category 1 hurricane, we partner with our locals. Our schools are extremely helpful. We rely on volunteers, and they all do a fantastic job. But when we know that threat is severe and on the higher end of the storm level, our Miami-Dade partners are there for us to help and support.
Can you talk about how the timing of evacuation occurs? What kind of coordination occurs between Monroe, Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and kind of the role the state has in terms of making sure that you know the evacuation occurs in a way that you don't have so much traffic backed up on the interstates?
So we do respond, you know, each county from Monroe, Miami-Dade, Broward to Palm Beach, we are considered a region in the state of Florida, under the Florida Division of Emergency Management. And we respond to a storm as a region, as well as individual counties, right? Because we are so spread out. May have a storm that threatens the Florida Keys, but Palm Beach County is not in the cone, or it's coming across the south end of Miami-Dade and the north end of Monroe, and you know, may affect Broward, but Palm Beach County and the south end of Monroe are clear. So we do coordinate for every event, every storm event as a region. We have a regional coordinator from the Florida Division of Emergency Management, and that individual facilitates a daily call when we are under the threat of a storm, when we are in the cone, and where we talk about what the threat is to our community and what our protective measures our county is taking and how that may impact the counties around us. So it's important for Monroe to always be talking to Miami-Dade County, because that's where our residents are evacuating to first and foremost. And if Miami-Dade knows that Monroe is evacuating and they also need to move people within their own county, we try to truly coordinate the timing throughout the region. And the same for Broward and Palm Beach, because we don't want to impact, you know, we want to minimize the amount of traffic, A, that we're putting on the road, the distance it's going, and not putting people in a position where they run out of time or they get stuck, because, you know, it's always, we're always trying to move in the, the best interests of public safety. So we coordinate daily when there is a storm out there, and talking about the protective measures that our county is taking and sharing the timing of it, so that the county, you know, adjacent to us can prepare is really important. But we have a good group of emergency managers in those 4 counties, and we work well together. And the truth is, we talk weekly, even when there is no storm, to help share information and support each other. So South, if you got to be somewhere for, you know, hurricane season, Southeast Florida is not so bad.
I recall years ago there was an agreement between the state and through mutual aid, or EMAG, to the state, and I think North Carolina, where I think patients of assisted living facilities would be evacuated via a National Guard C-130. I don't know if that is still in place, or how do you all accommodate those that are probably not able to get into a car right away and evacuate?
So when we do call for evacuations, we evacuate our special needs clients first, our special need population in the county first. We do provide, Monroe County does provide them transportation to the mainland, to the shelter at FIU. However, the contract that you're speaking of through mutual aid, we do have the Lower Keys Medical Center, which is the hospital in Key West, has that contract with the North Carolina National Guard to evacuate the hospital. And that is in the event that, again, we have called for the mandatory evacuation of the county. That hospital is in a surge zone, obviously, too, since we all are. And the hospital does what they call a phased evacuation, where they discharge the patients that they can, transport out some by ambulance, those that are capable, and try to as few as possible, but they have the option to bring in, like you said, aircraft from the National Guard, and they do evacuate the remaining patients that are prepped for that flight out of the county. So that does still exist. And that goes from when the county determines that we are going to call for that mandatory evacuation, the hospital reaches out to county emergency management with the request to activate that mutual aid agreement. And we reach out to the Florida Division of Emergency Management, and then they initiate the coordination with the guard. So sometimes they use air guard assets from other areas of the country, just depending on availability. But that is, yes, something that is also a unique evacuation challenge that we do here in the Keys.
Yeah, I can't think of any other community, either in the state or outside of Florida, that has that kind of arrangement. I'm assuming it's just because of the geographic challenges and evacuation that Monroe County has.
And the distance. We have two other hospitals in the county, but they're located in Marathon and Tavernier, which is just south of Key Largo. So it really is the distance that makes it the challenge.
I want to go back to what you talked about at the beginning when we were just talking about your position. You report to the county manager. A couple of weeks ago, we have a leadership program that our county commissioners can volunteer and go through. It's about a six-month program, and we do this in conjunction with the University of Florida, IFAS. And what we did a couple of weeks ago is we had it was on crisis leadership, crisis decision making, and we brought in a couple of different scenarios. But what we did is we also brought in a panel of a couple of county emergency managers and their bosses. So the county commissioner was also there. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting to listen to them talk about the importance of having the relationship that occurs between the EM director, the county manager, and the elected officials who are ultimately in charge under Chapter 252. So I wanted, if you can just talk a little bit about your position as it relates to the county manager, county commissioners, but particularly during an activation and how that works, and how do you avoid conflict, and how do you make sure that the egos are outside the door, and that you're able to do your job and protect people.
Sure. So in here in Monroe County, I think we have a very efficient and highly communicative system. So when it comes time to make a protective action decisions, we want to open shelters, we want to call for an evacuation of the county. What we do is I pull together an executive advisory group. And in that group, the members, it's comprised of the county administrator, the mayor, the fire chief, the sheriff, and then the county emergency manager. And we discuss what those threats are to the county and what is the best course of action to take protective measure wise. So we as a group make that, you know, they are that advisory group to me. You know, I generally, I work with all these people throughout the year anyway. So we always have, you know, a pretty good relationship and we decide the best way forward together. Then in turn, I have a liaison to the county commissioners, and she sits with me 99% of the time that we are activated, and she will take that information back to the county commissioners, and she will brief them on the status of the county and where we are going and the decisions that are being made. Lots of times they have questions, sometimes they don't. They come right back to her and she either knows the answers and can handle them or she comes to me. So that way we're all still able to do our jobs, but yet everyone has been communicating and is up to speed. Then, you know, say once the storm has passed and my, you know, we're clearing and we're doing some response and we might be starting some recovery. Of course, the county commissioners, you know, want to be involved and help out. So the best thing that I tell them is to go to your constituents, go to your neighborhoods, talk to your residents, see what it looks like on the ground, you know, in your areas, get feedback from your community members and bring it back to the liaison and let her share and brief me and know if there's anything that is out of the norm or there's an unmet need or something, you know, unique is going on. So that way, they really help with a situational awareness report, you know, which is incredibly valuable. We get that from our first responders in the field, but it's fantastic to get that through the response and recovery and event from the county commissioners as well. So they are truly representing their communities and looking out for them, you know, in the aftermath of that disaster. And the other thing that we do is when we have a new commissioner come on board, I do a briefing with them. And it's funny because they, almost every single one of them over the past 6 years has said to me, oh, I grew up here. I've lived through such and such storm. I know how the EOC works and emergency management works. And they all have some level of experience, but they all learn something new about how the county operates during an event. So, and they all say, oh my gosh, thank you. You know, I didn't know that you had a liaison, or I didn't know I could, you know, was able to get in touch so quickly, or I didn't know I had to make 5 phone calls to find out what's going on in the EOC. So I think that it goes a long way.
Well, let's talk about that, if you know, things that you can learn over time. So you had a very significant event in 2017. It was Hurricane Irma. The impacts to residential structures was staggering, as were the impacts to infrastructure. So, and we actually, I got, I think about a year after that event, I was able to go on a, I don't want to call it a tour, a site visit of the county with our National Association of Counties and some of the leadership there. And we were able to tour different parts of the county. But the one thing that really stuck out to me was the impact to all of the canals. And there were Winnebagos and other types of vehicles sitting in the canals a year after that event. But so I know the impact was significant. So from a preparedness and a response perspective, what are some of the lessons learned from that event that you have operationalized in your county?
So one of the big things, and this is something that comes out of every, not just every event, but lots of times even just training exercises, and it's nothing new, but is communications. And during Irma, we lost all communications. We lost our 800 parts of our 800 radio megahertz radio system for first responders. We did lose internet and cell service. And the only thing that was left was good old fashioned AM FM radio. And of course, our amateur radio operators as well. So, and we lost those communications for a few days. So it wasn't like, you know, so it was definitely a challenge, right? And then on top of it, you're spread out, you know, over 100 plus miles long, and you need to reach all parts of your community and all parts of, you know, all of your first responders in every geographic location. And that is just something that I don't think that we, obviously, we didn't plan for it properly. and that was one of the biggest lessons that we learned, is there's a lot of, we developed maintenance plans actually for the county owned radio towers. There lots of radio towers had generators, but the something as simple as the fuel had not been topped off at the beginning of hurricane season. So when the generators ran out of fuel, they stopped working. The tower stopped working. So that's something that is so simple and so basic that now our public works guys do not just every hurricane season, but before we have, when we know that there is a storm out there, each time that there is a threat, they go out there and they top off the fuel in those generators so that those communication towers will continue to run through a storm. We also found that we all had sat phones. We all had each other's sat phone numbers, but the sat phones didn't work with any consistency or regularity. The satellite had to be overhead at the exact right time of the day, and the sky had to be clear for your sat phone to work. So since then, our county IT has acquired the services of Starlink and expanded and hardened our our internet infrastructure and cabling so that we have a stronger, more redundant system should we need, you know, that we hopefully don't have to go to sat phone, but if we do, we can set up our own networks and use the Starlink, which is a lower level satellite, orbiting satellite, which will put us in a better position and give us better service than using, you know, the technology they had in 2017. So technology's helped us communicate better. But we know now we have a system of runners. Should we ever lose communication with any part of our county, we have a system in our EOC set up that they can go with a first responder to our county infrastructure. We have a facility in the Lower Keys, the Middle Keys, and the Upper Keys. They can go to each one of those areas and share information, meet, collect, and come back to the EOC. We've also put satellite technology in each one of our municipal EOCs so that if they lose connectivity, they can at least communicate with us via email or text from EOC to EOC, where we didn't have that capability at all before. And no one had ever thought that you might need a runner to communicate with another part of your county prior to Irma. So we didn't have, we lost our computers in our EOC. So now all the forms that we use to request resources from the state, to make assignments, to document all the response activity that's going on, has to be done with a pen and paper, or we have manual forms that we can fax if we need to, or if we need to make a phone call and read off the form to the Florida Division of Emergency Management requesting a resource, we have those forms in place. And it's funny because I have staff that was not here for Irma, and says, do we really, the computer system will work. We have redundant systems. We have generators. Do we really need those? And the answer is yes, you really need those because, you know, you don't know what a category 4 or 5 storm can bring you and what your infrastructure is truly going to be able to survive. So communications in all forms is really the number one and the most critical. And then after that, I would say we did change and we developed several early reentry programs after Irma. Residents, you know, it's people don't like to leave their homes in an emergency. People don't want to not only just leave their home and drive 2 or 3 hours away and come back after a storm and see what has happened. And if they do, they want to come back as soon as possible to, you know, clean up if the water damage and the mold, and we know how devastating that can be to a home. People want to come back home and take care of their homes and property as soon as possible. So we do not call for an evacuation carelessly. So much consideration, so much science goes into that decision. And when we make that call, we are automatic. We begin immediately planning on how soon will we be able to bring people back into the county? When are those winds are going to die down? How soon can we get damage assessment teams out? How soon can we clear the roads so we can let people know when to expect to come home? So, and we heard that from our residents, that that was a big concern post-Irma. It took too long to come back into the county. And we had areas of the county where the road had washed off. The one road in and out had washed away and needed to be, you know, temporarily rebuilt. So we could bring those people back home as soon as possible. What we developed out of that was what we called a business early reentry program. If you are a business in Monroe County and you can provide a service that can support the response or the recovery, if you're a landscaper or a contractor or a roofer, or even, you know, you're a hotel and you can provide rooms to sleep, or you are a grocery and you can provide food, we allow you to apply to our early business reentry program. And you have to basically provide us with a plan of how you plan to come back and be self-sustaining. Should you have no water, electricity, place to live? And once you get your business back on the ground, how you can help the county or your community with the skill set that you have. So we have that program for businesses in the county. We also have a residential early reentry program. And that program kind of was born out of the idea of FEMA's Community Emergency Response Team program. But here in Monroe County, we call it MERC, the Monroe Emergency Response Team and Response Corps, I'm sorry. And which was initially started by the county, they ended up separating the county, becoming their own 501c3 not-for-profit. But they work with us on training residents to be self-sufficient in the same vein as the FEMA CERT program, to be able to take care of themselves, to have a plan on how they can take care of themselves and how they can then volunteer with the community as a whole through our COAD, our community organizations active in disasters, and help other community members, whether they're doing, you know, check-in work at the EOC, or, you know, they're helping staff, a feeding site, whatever it might be, a way that they can help once they come back in early and get their homes secured and safe, and that they can be self-sufficient and take care of themselves as well. So not to put any undue stress on the county. So those two counties or those two programs were a direct result of feedback from our community members post-Irma.
Yeah, I mean, I think those two issues, communication and reentry, are things that we hear consistently from other areas that were impacted severely. Thinking of Hurricane Michael, that was a big issue in Bay County, and Bay County has taken really big steps to make sure they have built-in redundancy for communication. And the reentry issue, everybody wants to get back to the house. They want to see what it looks like. They want to see whether or not they can do work themselves, whether or not they need to put a blue tarp on. So that I think those are really critical things that you guys have put in place. And let's, if we could, just kind of step back and take a broader view in your current position as president of the Florida Emergency Preparedness Association. Not a lot of folks know who they are. We at FAC do. But can you talk a little bit about the organization, what its primary goals are, and what you're currently doing as the president?
Sure. FEPA, the Florida Emergency Preparedness Association, has been around since 1956, actually. So those are, kind of the early civil defense days before we transitioned from civil defense to emergency management. And basically, it was created by a small group of professional emergency managers who wanted to help make the emergency management profession better, stronger, more cohesive in their work protecting the people of Florida. So today, our mission is to provide an educational network between the emergency management community, our emergency managers, and all of the partners that we work with. So whether they are federal, state, or local government, tribal government, volunteer organizations, not-for-profits, and the private industry as well, we want to create that network and nurture it and grow it between all those entities on emergency management issues. So very much a builder of the network of all those people to come together, support each other, share best practices, share lessons learned, provide training and education. That's really the mission of the Florida Emergency Preparedness Association. And as the president, I have the honor to be able to work to represent our emergency managers from all of those sectors here in Florida, and bringing, helping represent and bringing together people, partners, whoever it may be, to kind of address some of the challenges that we face as emergency managers, keep us up to date, keep the emergency management community up to date on emerging issues or unmet needs, and help us all work together just to strengthen the profession across the state of Florida as a whole.
Well, I mean, I think what you just said on partners and network, I think someone from the outside would believe that, well, it's the to prepare and respond to a major event. It's on the emergency management office, the emergency management director. You can't do it without a team of others. So, that comprehensive emergency management plan isn't just yours. It is filled with a network of support functions that have to work together in both blue skies and gray skies. So I think that is really great that you have continued to focus on that. Something that I was thinking about before we got on the podcast here was, I think other than the emergency management community, I think the emergency management community had been thinking about a COVID type event for a while, whether it's bird flu and E1N1, I get those all mixed up. But that is something that is kind of an outlier that people really didn't think about, but I think the emergency management community and its partners had actually thought about that type of event. So when we had COVID-19, I think the response to that was, while a little chaotic, it was well done, well coordinated, and I think the EM community at all levels did very, very well. Are there any other sort of threats on the horizon that the EM community is thinking about, or something that maybe the someone from the public may not be aware of? Is there, you know, because let me go back to 9/11. I remember a former state emergency management director for Florida had talked about terrorism as a threat. Now, this is in the late 90s, and I thought, that's not something we're really going to have to worry about. Well, then 9/11 happens, and so that really changed a lot of stuff at all levels of government. So just going back to thinking like that, are there other threats that the EM community is looking at, thinking about?
You know, I think something that we've seen on a certain level that I get asked frequently about here in Monroe County is the migration. So while other areas of Florida have not seen a migration event, we have experienced that heavily here in Monroe County. And I think you're starting to see a few migrant landings throughout South Florida and especially Southeast Florida and a few other parts. They've seen a few wash-ups of migrant vessels, empty migrant vessels along the Northeast coast of Florida. And a lot of times, those other EM directors will look at me and say, what is that? What do you think that'll look like if it happens? What do you think, you know, what do we need to be prepared to do if that happens? Who is responsible if that happens? Because it's not going to be people walking in like on the Southwest border. People are coming in by boat. So in Monroe County, I think we started to see a large number of migrant landings we are in 2023 now. It was the fall, it was November of 2021. We had our first migrant landing of a Haitian sailing boat with over 250 Haitian migrants. Landed in the north end of our county in Ocean Reef, the Ocean Reef community. And you have literally 200 plus people wash up on your shore, come up out of the ocean, exhausted, dehydrated, wet, and happy to have made it to land, but now they need assistance. And that was the first time that Monroe County had a migrant landing of that magnitude since the 90s, I believe. Since then, we subsequently had, we found ourselves very involved in with caring for migrants. Having these landings through early 2022 and into the summer. And the truth is, you know, I remember my county administrator said, look, this is becoming a growing problem. The Ocean Reef community continued to have several more landings, one of which they estimated there had been 500 individuals on the vessel total. Some stayed on the vessel and went into Coast Guard custody, while others did swim to shore and went into Border Patrol custody. But from the emergency management perspective, we're not the lead. Border Patrol is your lead agency on land and Coast Guard in the water. But we were the facilitator and the coordinator between the two federal entities and then all the responding agencies on shore, which included your local fire rescue, law enforcement. But here in Monroe County, because, you know, we are limited in our resources, and the federal resources as well are not heavy here in the county because we are, and we all cover a large area, right? but we had our partners from Florida Fish and Wildlife, and Florida Highway Patrol, who were also willing to help. And then, of course, our hospitals were always on standby to know if they would, if there was going to be, you know, the need for medical transportation and care. So that was really a truly a federal, state, and local response every single time there was a landing in Monroe County through, I mean, and even still today. We do have more resources. If there is a mass migration event, the Department of Homeland Security has a task force called Homeland Security Task Force Southeast. It is their job. They are created specially to reply to a mass migration event from Georgia through the Caribbean. So all over, all around the state of Florida, they are the lead in that response. Because of what was happening, we did go to the task force and say, look, you guys, we can't handle this locally. Your federal resources in our counties don't have enough resources to handle it. We need the task force to stand up, expand their operations, and bring more resources into our county to assist. And that did happen in December of 2022. And then the governor declared a migration emergency in the state of Florida in January of this year, right as those additional resources from the feds were coming in. And he additionally pushed additional state resources here into the county and South Florida, Southeast Florida, to help. And that's been, you know, hugely helpful for our local first responders and the Coast Guard as well, increasing their presence offshore. We've had much fewer landings because there have been more interdictions at sea. So that really helps to minimize the problem. But it is a completely unique and different response. And it's one that other emergency managers outside of those in from Palm Beach to Monroe County are aware of. And actually, each one of us in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, and Monroe, the emergency manager for that county is the liaison to the task force. So we have a seat at the table, which is incredible. And the task force has been highly communicative. I can't say enough about how responsive the Coast Guard and Border Patrol has been through the past year and a half, it's almost 2 years now, but they have truly listened. They've come to our counties, they've briefed our administrators and our mayors, and our, you know, they have been incredibly grateful for our help, but have clearly taken the lead on the response, the care, the transportation of the migrant community when they do land here. And it could be worse for us, and maybe because we're out in the middle of the ocean, we're the first piece of land of the United States, being the southernmost city and the southernmost county in the U.S. But they're starting to see a little bit more in Southeast Florida as well. And I've heard stories from up in the Fort Pierce area and as far north as Jacksonville. So I don't know that the whole state would be overwhelmed at the same time, but certainly, you know, there are areas that may experience, you know, the effects of a mass migration. But I can tell you that the Coast Guard and Border Patrol are doing all that they can so that we don't have to.
That's great. Well, Shannon, I've had you on for a while, but I've got a final question if I could. And this is really aimed at our local elected officials, our county commissioners. And it is, you know, from an emergency management perspective, I mean, what recommendations do you or does FEPA have, for them? What I would say under blue skies today, and even the gray skies when we have an event, what are maybe the top two things that you would hope every elected official would know with respect to emergency management?
I would say in blue skies, as soon as you come on board, establish that relationship with your county emergency manager. Reach out to them, let them know, you know, who you are, what your priorities are. Ask them, you know, how emergency management operates in their county, what they see as the, you know, their biggest vulnerabilities and their biggest threats. Ask them how they can help support. Because just as much as your county commissioners need to know what's going on from you during an event, you're going to need to know what's going on in their in the community in as well. They can be that bridge. And I would encourage them to sit down and have that conversation with their emergency manager. And, you know, I've had it lots of times. I've had commissioners come to me and say, I don't want to get in the way, but I want to help. And this is what's important to me and how can I help? Establishing some type of formal communication system on the emergency management side with those commissioners as a whole, I think is really important from the that the emergency manager do that, but being open-minded as a commissioner, as a city or county commissioner, asking questions of your emergency manager in blue skies so that when you do have an event, you know your role, and you know how you can help out so that, you know, it's being prepared. It's part of being prepared in your job as a commissioner to know how you can best help the response should your county need.
Well, that is great advice. And we are, 20 days, 10, 15 days? I can't even count. A couple of weeks before hurricane season. And so I thought it would just be, because of that, so appropriate to invite you on based on your experience and based on your leadership role with FEPA. And Chan and I want to thank you for taking the time today. I'm glad we were finally able to get this scheduled.
Yes.
And thanks for all that you do for your community and for the state of Florida under FEPA. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right.